And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Yes, indeed. Good morning. 5 minutes past nine on this Thursday, the 6th of February, 2025. How are you all keeping? I really do hope you're very well indeed. And if you're not, that you feel very well in the not too distant future. We're broadcasting, of course, here from the heart of the northwest of Ireland, and it's blue skies. A wonderful morning today, bright and crisp. I hope it's the same wherever you are. I'm sure it is if you're across the northwest, but many of you tune in from further afield, and it's great to have you all on board. Okay, the lines are open for you right now if you want to contribute to some of the topics that we have lined up for you, or indeed if there's something that you want to raise with us. 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, your WhatsApps and texts. If you are listening outside the Republic of Ireland, 00353 86 60 25,000. And if you want to give us a call, 07491 25,000, that's the telephone number, and our email address is comments@highlandradio.com. Good morning, Anthony and Beth, both saying hello early on our live stream on Facebook. Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituary Notices on Highland Hub on Facebook as well. And we're also on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, so you can watch the show on your smart TV or your Fire Stick, and on Elon Musk's X platform. Let's have a look at the papers, because we do have loads of guests lined up for you today. The front of the Derry People Donegal News. A Letterkenny woman has told of her turmoil and fear after learning the man jailed for raping her is to be released from prison in April of next year, 3 years early. Dominique Meehan was brutally attacked by Keith Hearn at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Blanchardstown on July 4th, 2015. Ms. Meehan had been volunteering at an arcade con gaming convention, setting up a projector in a screening room, when Hearn locked the door, tied her up, raped her and threatened to kill her with a knife. Hearn of Alberton Drive, Dublin, pleaded guilty to two counts of rape, one count of false imprisoning Miss Meehan. He was sentenced to 12 years imprisonment in June 2017, but he is due early release now, 3 years early. You can read more from Dominique in that paper today. The Tyrconnell Tribune, new bishop for Raphoe Diocese. That was the news confirmed by clergy at weekend masses in the diocese, as mass goers also heard that six priests are to retire this year as their numbers continue to decline further. Six in 1 year, hard to replenish when you see so few entering the priesthood now compared to the generation of priests that's retiring now. Prior to the final blessing in Holy Cross Church, Dunfanaghy, on Sunday, the parish priest, Father Martin Doohan, told the congregation that last Friday the administrator of the diocese, Monsignor Kevin Gillespie, called all the priests together. Father Doohan said Monsignor Gillespie had met with his consultors, and he instructed the priest to tell the people that despite recent speculation, a bishop would be appointed to the Diocese of Raphoe. They don't know when. It could be the summer, or it could be later on. Amalgamation with Derry is not on the cards at the minute, which is significant news. So there is no new bishop announced as such, but there will be a bishop with a specific responsibility of Raphoe. On to the Derry news this morning. Councillors and MLAs in line for pay rises, north and south, actually. TDs are due a big pay rise shortly. But up north, council and assembly pay for the north's politicians has come under scrutiny. Derry City and Strabane District councillors last week voted in favour of the Department for Communities' updated scheme of allowance. Under the scheme, every member's annual base allowance will increase from €15,071 to €17,456. It's the first rise since 2019 and will be backdated to April 2024. Nice little tickle. It's always nice when you see the sterling sign in front of it too. It feels a little bit more significant. We carried and discussed comments from Donald Trump yesterday about his plans for Gaza. Interesting, his press secretary, who pulls no punches, is really quite direct, rolled back significantly, actually, on a lot of his claims, talking of temporarily moving people out and then them moving back in. But anyway, it's still on the cards. But as I say, the White House itself rolling back really quite significantly on his suggestion that he would move everyone out and build the Riviera in the Middle East effectively. But the papers might be a little bit behind the story. President Donald Trump's proposal for the US to take over war-ruined Gaza and create a Riviera of the Middle East after resettling Palestinians elsewhere has shattered US policy on the Israel-Palestine conflict, drawing global condemnation. The shock move from Trump drew rebukes from international powers, including Russia, China and Germany, which said it would bring new suffering and new hatred. Regional heavyweight Saudi Arabia rejected the proposal outright. In his first major Middle East policy announcement, Trump said he envisaged building a resort where international communities could live in harmony after over 15 months of Israeli bombardment, devastating the tiny coastal enclave and killing more than 47,000 people by Palestinian tallies. But as I say, the White House rolling back significantly in relation to that. So maybe that's one he might not presume. Do you remember the smartphone pouches? You might have thought that, you know, the controversy over them would have led to the notion being scrapped, but no, the government are persisting with it. The Times tells us that the government will press ahead with plans to spend €9 million of your money on smartphone pouches. Minister for Education Helen McEntee has said, despite new research that has found banning phones in schools is not linked to pupils getting higher grades or having better mental health. Even outside of schools, students spend 4 to 6 hours per day on their phones. Well, she was speaking following the publication of the first study of its kind, which found that students' sleep, classroom behaviour, exercise and the time spent on their phones overall seemed to be no different from schools with or without phones. However, academics did find that spending longer on smartphones and social media in general was linked with worst results for all of those measured. The University of Birmingham's findings, published by The Lancet, Journal for European Health Policy, compared 1,227 students and the rules their 30 different secondary schools had for smartphone use at break and lunchtime. So €9 million is being spent on these smartphone pouches. And it's not a one-off payment. It's going to be an ongoing commitment. And Helen McEntee was controversial in her other portfolio and maybe could have had a win by saying, look at, you know, we've looked at research. Maybe we can spend this €9 million elsewhere in education. But they're going to stick with it anyway. I don't know. Maybe you're delighted about that. 086 60 25,000. Staying with that national stuff, but obviously, like everything, national news is local news. The Irish Daily Mail tells us that over 90,000 new houses need to be built annually for the next 6 years to meet demand. So we built 30. We did. I didn't build one. 30,000 were built last year. 10,000 below government targets. But actually, really, we need 90,000 new homes. But this is predicting, this is based on a prediction that our population is going to reach 6 million, which also is based on an awful lot of inward migration as well. But anyway, 90,000 new houses need to be built over the next 6 years to meet demand, with Micheál Martin admitting a fundamental shift is needed in the approach and attitude to private sector investment. The Taoiseach yesterday told the Dáil that he was very disappointed with the final housing completion figures for last year when the state only built 30,330 units. A spokesperson for the Taoiseach told the paper last night there will be a fundamental review about how we incentivise private construction, especially in apartment buildings. Under fire in the Dáil about whether the public were misled on housing completions in the general election campaign, Mr. Martin said we need a fundamental shift, not just within the government, but in the Oireachtas, more generally in our approach and our attitudes to private sector investment. The Farmers' Journal, it's always out. It's a big lift, isn't it? It's a big paper. Lots of you still buy it. It's the most popular paper in the country. I think they shift 200 or 300 copies a week, 100,000 copies a week, which is really quite remarkable in this day and age. Land prices, and it's also to, there's new listenership figures out tomorrow. We know what they are. We're embargoed. We can't talk about them, but they're out tomorrow. They're out today now. We knew them yesterday, but they're out today. They come out after 12. So by the time we get to mention them on this show, it's always old news, right? So it's kind of frustrating. And the rest of the country gets to talk about their figures. But, I mean, if I could talk about them, I would say thank you. But I can't talk about it. I mean, hypothetically, if thousands more of you were listening every day, it would be something I'd be really grateful for. We'd be really grateful for as a team. In fact, overall, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 more of you every day were listening. It would be fantastic. We'll see at 12, but just let's say if that were the case, though I can't say it because of this embargo, thank you so very, very much for supporting this show and continue to support it and supporting it in greater numbers. Just in this day and age where people can get stuff from, you know, we've got a massive change in the population here. So in terms of percentages, right, you divide your listenership into the total amount of people that can listen to a radio station, okay? And, you know, that could potentially drive the figures down because maybe new people coming to Donegal don't listen to Highland Radio. Yet, despite the increase in population, the popularity of the show and this show and the station as a whole is actually growing, even with Spotify and podcasts and competition from all national radio stations. It really is quite remarkable that we can enjoy such a fantastic relationship with our listeners. As I say, the figures will be released at 12, but we, in advance, I think they're going to be okay. Look, we thank you for your continued support of the show, especially with everything that should make your figures go down. We're going up, and it's fantastic. Anyway, I was talking about the Farmers Journal. Land prices increased by 590 euro an acre to an average of 12,315 in 2024. The Irish Farmers Journal Agriculture and Price Report 2024 is revealed, and it's inside this, and there's a focus on Donegal. I think really a lot of it is about how much land is actually changes hands in the course of a year, and it's not massive amounts, as you can imagine. Farmland, farmers hold on to farmland quite a bit, so the price of land has gone down in Donegal, but often if I'm not mistaken, it's about the quality of land that it's exchanged in any given year. Am I right? Well, the lowest prices paid were in counties Leitrim, Mayo, Donegal and Sligo, but as I say, it could be down to the quality of the land that was. Wouldn't it be embarrassing if we didn't get an invite, as a country, didn't get an invite to America for St. Patrick's Day? Michael Martin would be gutted again, because I think the last time he was over there, he was sick or something happened. That's right, there was a storm, wasn't there? And then before that, there was COVID, and it's been frustrated over and over again. Well, normally, around about now, the Irish government would have received their invitation to go over for the annual viz to the White House. Will it happen this year? Do you think Donald Trump will invite Micheál Martin? If he does invite him, do you think he should go? There is no suggestion that Ireland wouldn't take up an invitation for Taoiseach Micheál Martin to meet US President Donald Trump on St. Patrick's Day. This, according to the Irish Daily Star. It comes following calls for the Social Democrats, not surprisingly, for Mr. Martin to reconsider travelling to Washington, D.C. if President Trump continues to make comments about Gaza. But, I mean, the argument will always be that you accept this invite because we can go over there and face-to-face express our disagreement with him rather than saying we're not, you know, it doesn't achieve anything really as such, does it, by not going? You go over there and you sort of say, right, you know, we have our concerns, blah, 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 blah. Sinead Gibney of the Social Democrats urged Mr. Martin to summon the new US ambassador to Ireland, Edward Walsh, to a meeting as soon as he takes his post. She also stated that if President Trump continues his significant change in rhetoric, the Taoiseach should not go to the White House next month. He hasn't been invited yet, and he should have been invited by now, but he hasn't. But if he is, should he go? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. Not much in the other tabloids. One story that caught my eye, The Sun. Sales of weight loss drug Wegovy more than doubled in the final 3 months of the last year. This is clearly something that's incredibly effective in terms of weight loss. It's also been shown these weight loss drugs have really positive impacts on other people's or other aspects of people's health. Is it time that it is, if it's not already, but it is prescribed more widely for people who wish to lose weight? Because, as I say, lots of people are getting access to it one way or other. Maker Novo Nordisk said they hit 2.9 billion, up from 1.3 billion in the same period in 23. Across the whole of last year, there was a 96% increase, or an 86% increase, the Danish pharmaceutical company also announced. And maybe you have a story of using that. Let us know. 086 60 25,000. And I think this was mentioned in the news. Ireland did not have its warmest January ever, like the UK, but did endure record winds thanks to Storm Eowyn, Met Aaron says. One of the highest gusts at Finnair in South Donegal there, 150 kilometres per hour. And many of us still sort of trying to rebuild, so to speak, after that. Okay, that was a run through the papers. Anything there you want to comment on, let us know. 07491 25000, looking to take your call there. Quite a bit of traffic disruption in and around Strabane. We're trying to ascertain why, but you're probably sitting in it listening to us and you would understand why, but we're trying to get to the bottom of that. But stay safe there. Right, okay. We're going to talk to Liam Mulligan now. Hi, Liam.
Hi, Greg.
Good to have you on the show. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about, I suppose, the fallout from Storm Eowyn, the government's role, the ESB's role. I mean, I think we can all say that we are full of admiration for the on-the-ground workers working in really tough conditions, trying to work through all the problems. Notwithstanding that, there are bigger questions for the ESB to answer, because apparently we're going to have to pick up the storm, the bill for Storm Eowyn.
This is the fact of the nature of the rules the government has laid down for how we pay for the network. We pay for the network through the standing charge. The standing charge is effectively renegotiated every 5 years between the ESB and the Commissioner for the Regulation of Utilities, who is put there by the government. And to some extent, his job is to stop the ESB spending money, spending too much money. But how do you find too much when it comes to something like this? And we do have the... I've dealt with the ESB for over 30 years. It has good sides. It has sides which need a lot of improvement. But it has also this unique difficulty of the nature of our network. The ESB is part of two genuinely revolutionary actions that our government has taken, the Shannon scheme, which was launched 100 years ago this year, and the rural electrification, which started in the 40s when we were quite a poor, depressed country. And to do that, we followed an American model, which is the cheapest possible model for delivering power in rural areas. And it leaves us with vulnerabilities. But as I say, we are not Netherlands and Belgium, say, which fit about five times the population into the same area as the Republic. So there are going to be things, but who's responsible?
If I'm not mistaken, the ESB is semi-state, right? Ishke Aaron semi-state.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's been generational underspending in our water infrastructure, isn't that correct?
That's correct.
Yep. So yeah. Now Ishke Aaron is charged with bringing it up to certain standard. Yeah. Okay. Investing heavily right across the country, in fairness. Yeah. Still an awful lot of work to do. But that's just given that that's what Ishke Aaron does, and that's taken out of our general taxation. The ESB model is that, you know, maybe they don't maintain the infrastructure as well as they should have over the years. The chickens come home to roost because of Storm Eowyn, and then they expect us to pay for their underinvestment, even within the confines. Because even with the confines of what the CRU is saying, we still have to presume that the money they're spending is being spent correctly.
Well, that's always the question: is the money being spent correctly? But is there sufficient money? Prior to the reorganization of the electric market 25 years ago, ESB was a state-controlled monopoly. The government set the price of electricity. And about 25 years ago, when it was changing over, we had one of the least reliable networks in Europe. I'm trying to remember back to presentations made 25 years ago that they had, without major storms, they had 282 minutes of unplanned outages per customer. That's over 4 hours. And that was, when you calculate that was the people in Dublin had practically no unplanned outages, what the situation with the rural consumer was. The poles were rotting. The wires had not expanded enough with the increase in consumption. If somebody had a milking parlour beside you, your lights went brown during the milking. Mm-hmm. And there was a massive investment then in the noughties to improve the sort of job that Uisce Éireann is doing now in the water supply system. The ESB did in the noughties. Now, we come to this situation. Have we come to a situation where both the ESB and the regulator acting for the government have tried to hold back spending, and have they permitted enough spending? Have they planned enough spending?
I don't know. Do you have an answer to that question?
I don't have an answer.
Because the scenario we are in, we pay some of the highest electricity rates in the country. We generate a third of our power on average is green. There seems to be no dividend for that. The network is such that a lot of that's actually wasted because we can't store it, and the network can't really carry it as far as it needs to. It's an omni shambles. So
there's an omni shambles in the electricity supply throughout Europe. We have our own particular version of that omni shambles.
Except we're being shafted by paying the. I think I could swallow the outages a bit more if I was paying some of the lowest rates in the country. Well, so where's the money going? Like, where's the money going? What's it being invested in? How's it being spent?
Well, you have to say, the question is, we need a clarification. We need the government to come out. We do need an investigation into where the money is going, because there's two sides to your electricity bill. There's the network, and that is very clearly put together, planned by the government. And then there's the actual electricity itself, the generation of electricity, which is an open market, and that the market decides. So which part of it is causing the increase in costs? Is it the network? Is it trying to pull the network
together?
We want that information.
Yeah, but I think there's more going on than that, right? Say, for instance, we seem to have unlimited capacity for data centres, right? Data centres now draw more power than all of the domestic electricity. And we can continually accommodate them. Right, so that clearly, the investment, obviously, is going into the infrastructure to support data centres. It's not going into it to make sure that there's a decent network from one town to the next in Donegal. That has to be the case, surely, no?
No, the way that works is that the data centres sit down beside the high voltage. Say, if a data centre is in Letterkenny, it'd sit near Listillion. They theoretically don't need more infrastructure. But what it means is that we need a lot more infrastructure. This is a question of the silo thinking. The IDA is changing data centres, which don't provide a lot of employment, but they're chasing data centres. And the government is regulating a network for something else. So we have to have joined up thinking. We are getting too many more data centres than we can handle. Yet the government is insisting we take them in. Why is that? We need to plan our network. And storage is going to cost money. Storage is going to need a complete change of thinking from the government, whether it's hydrogen or whether it's water or what it is. It's not going to be batteries. Batteries will cover you up to a certain point. It's easier to invest in. They're smaller in the amount of work that has to be done, but it's not sufficient for what we need. And the government simply isn't moving to do this because this is a maintenance issue.
Right, so you're saying effectively we need to know where money is being spent.
Maintenance is the last thing government thinks about.
All right, okay. Listen, interesting insights. Thanks so very much indeed. That was Liam Mulligan there. Who was commenting on that stuff. Anything you want to say, 086 60 25,000. There is a tailback of traffic, as I mentioned there a little while ago. It's a tailback of traffic going from Apple Green Lifford into the roundabout at Asda Strabane. It is due to a traffic collision. This listener believes that nobody appears to be hurt, but police are on the scene there. Other comments coming in. Do the fools at the RSA actually drive? I have an Astra 1.7 CDTI, and it looks like I'll be driving around in second and fourth gear to keep to new speed limits, according to trials I've tried over the last couple of days. Even in fourth gear, it's impossible to keep at 60 kilometres per hour. It stays between 61 and 70 kilometres per hour at least 80% of the time. While this isn't the smallest engine, it's not the biggest either, so God help anyone with 2-litre engines and EVs, as there's no chance in hell that they'll be able to keep within the confines of the new speed limits, taking into consideration the torque and the BHP of these vehicles. I don't know who these people are that are making these decisions, but it looks like we are all losing our licences this year and paying lots of fines, unless, of course, they're going to buy us all new cars with 1-litre engines that will actually manage to keep within the new limits. It's a joke that the government has let it go this far, for anyone with common sense would know these speed limits are impossible to keep within using modern cars. It's difficult enough with the current speed limits that we're all trying to abide by. I've not really, I know where you're coming from. I've driven an Astra 1.7 CDTI, but I'm sure you can adapt. Like, I mean, we're not talking wholesale changes. We did a piece on this yesterday, and you know the roads that we're talking about here. It's the small local rural roads. But anyway, Paul, listen, that's your view. I appreciate where you're coming from, and many will agree, some will disagree, and that's just the nature of way things are. Okay, we're going to be back talking about the situation in the Middle East after this short break. There's no doubt that President Donald Trump, the US President Donald Trump's comments as it related to Gaza was an incredibly significant policy shift from the United States, but sent shockwaves around the world because of what he proposed, which effectively was what many are describing as the ethnic cleansing of Gaza, moving, you know, up to 2 million Palestinians out, housing them or making them refugees effectively in other countries, Jordan and Egypt, Turkey, I think he mentioned. And when he made his announcement, there was no word of it being temporary or them ever returning, that Gaza would be turned into effectively a millionaire's row, a holiday resort for the entire world. And this was all related as Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel looked over, you know, smirking, laughing, agreeing, not rejecting it. Now, as I say, the White House seems to have rolled back a little bit on it, but the shockwaves are still being felt. Tim, your reflections on what President Trump had to say.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me on. I mean, I think this is just another example or an extension of what is happening since Israel came into existence. I mean, Israel has been a colonial state since the very beginning, a colonial state that is essentially an apartheid state. And that has been, you know, which has been since 1948, wherein they displaced 800,000 people, Palestinian people, from their homes, many of whom ended up in Gaza. I think half the population of Gaza were people who were displaced directly or the descendants of those people. So this is just the US continuing and supporting the attitude or the Zionist approach of Israel. And I think it's about time now that the world actually stood up and, you know, I mean, we've heard all of the condemnation I mean, I think both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach's comments yesterday about Trump were actually very weak, and not even at that point they're even backing down on that. And we have to actually take strong action against Israel along the lines that we did with South Africa, which was another apartheid state. And the world eventually brought an end to that state.
In terms of,
Greg, Ireland was a leader in that. Ireland was one of the first countries to impose sanctions. Mm. And I think it's time now that Ireland took a moral, principled stance. And it may cost us, but we take a stance and actually start doing some action.
Like what, though? I mean, Ireland did join South Africa, as a country you just mentioned, in their case against Israel. There's no Israeli ambassador in Ireland any longer. Some of the language used by those that have been elected as leaders of this country has been quite pointed and sharp towards Israel. I mean, as we see this play out, there's no point having a massive reaction to what Donald Trump has said, is there? Because in 24 hours since he said it, there's already been a significant rollback from the White House and quite a significant international backlash. So maybe we're just involved in the art of democracy here. Let's wait to see how the dust settles before we burn any bridges on this issue.
Craig, I think we need to go beyond the just the reactive politics of the last thing that was said or the last atrocity or whatever. We need to look at the fact that Israel is a Zionist apartheid state, and that's exactly what it is. The ICJ has ruled that it is an apartheid state and that it is committing genocide. And we have to go beyond the diplomacy, the making speeches, to actually taking action.
Like what, though? Sorry, Tim. What else can we do? Pardon my ignorance.
Craig, I was trying to get... Okay. As I was trying to say there, Ireland took a lead when it came to South Africa mm-hmm. and imposed sanctions. We banned all the import of all goods from South Africa. We have currently before the Dáil, and have had since, I think, 2018, the Occupied Territories Bill, which the government has consistently kicked to touch and now is saying, oh, we have to rewrite it. This is nonsense. Now, that is just a minimal, very, very minimal. It only applies to goods that are produced and services that are produced within the occupied within the occupied territories. That we need to step this up. We need to actually sanction Israel, and we do have an ambassador. We have ambassadors from other countries that are based in London. Just because they closed the embassy, we have an ambassador. You know, I don't know if you've had her on the radio here, but I've heard her on RTE certainly. And so we have, the diplomatic channels are still there, but we need to up it. We need to impose sanctions upon Israel. Mm-hmm. We need to impose economic, political, and cultural, and academic, and cease all contact and all support for this. I mean, we've had a situation not that long ago in Second World War when... You know, the world essentially stood back and appeased Germany and appeased the Nazis, and that ended up in the Holocaust. And after that, that shocked the world. But what has happened since? We now have a situation where the Zionist state, and that's not the Jewish people, this is not the Jewish people doing this by any means. It is a political ideology mm-hmm. that is doing this.
Okay, so what and are you... To what end? Okay, so the action that you're proposing is to compel Israel to do what?
To end the practice of apartheid. I'm sorry, Greg, but, you know, in July, the ICJ ruled that all states have a duty to prevent genocide, mm-hmm. to prevent apartheid. An actual duty to do it. And, you know, short of invading, okay, and I'm not proposing that, I'm not proposing a military action. It worked in South Africa, was to isolate. The EU has to do it. Any right-thinking country has to do this. You know, Israel is economically vulnerable. It is entirely dependent upon support mm-hmm. from the West to exist. Switching that off, will end it.
I understand what you're saying, Tim, and Ireland could take its stand, what have you. But there is the level of influence and integration between the likes of the United States and Israel, but also other major significant countries. It would make no material difference. It would be a stand, but this is not like South Africa. Israel and Israelis have an incredible influence.
I'm sorry, Greg. It is exactly like South Africa, and I know I'm not too sure.
So you're saying,
remember apartheid?
Yeah, okay, I understand.
I was part of the anti-apartheid
Tim, I don't know. This seems to be one of the issues where people don't want a two-way conversation. I don't know why, but every time I try and discuss the issue in the Middle East, it's impossible to have a two-way conversation because people get so edgy about it. I know it's significant, right? But it's surely something we need to tease out and talk about and get different views on. And I say that with absolute respect, Tim. The point I was making, do you believe there was the same level of interdependency between South Africa and the United States as there is between the United States and Israel?
What has that got to do with it, Greg?
Because this is what protects Israel, right? Is because the economies and what have you between Israel and the United States are so interdependent, and money talks. And that's what I'm saying is different about the South African situation. It was easier, I think, for people to take a stand in the way that they did. But Israel has influence, seemingly a great deal of influence, that it can exercise on the likes of the United States and other countries. And that's how I believe it to be different to South Africa, regardless of my age.
Okay. Well, I think we have to go back then in a little bit, because there was a point when South Africa's influence on the United States, on Europe, on Israel, even. Israel was actually started off being critical of South Africa, and then switched to actually supporting South Africa. But there was a point where we are at now, when South Africa's political influence around the world supported it, allowed it to exist for decades and decades. And then it wasn't, Ireland took a lead, and it was in the 80s, when, to be honest with you, we were broke, but people took a principled stand. Okay? And, you know, the same, as I said in my text, I actually compared what was going on to I'm not trying to compare the Nazi slaughter of the Jews, but the world stood by. Mm-hmm. The world waited. And the world waited in terms of South Africa until public pressure, until some brave workers in Dunn stores took the stand and refused to handle South African goods. Yeah. And that is what precipitated it. And that brought pressure onto the Irish government here eventually, you know. But Ireland led. It's mm-hmm. time for us to again take a moral, principled stand and do something. The words may be good, the words may be fine, and all of the protestations may be fine. But, this is something that needs to happen, and it needs to happen in a pressured way.
No, I get you. I'm being cynical. I mean, the time you talk of is when, you know, the influential people or the people that had a voice or a platform were the likes of Gay Byrne and stuff. You know, we just are in a very different country now, whereby, you know, there's an awful lot of pro-Trump supporters in this country. Half of America, of course, is pro-Trump. You know, there are quite large political divides now, you know.
Greg.
Yeah.
Joe Biden was stated... This isn't to do with Trump. I'm sorry. I mean, you're trying to, as I said at the beginning, let's not just go from one crisis to the other, one headline to the other. And I know, understand you're a news organization, but I mean, that is one thing that has changed, actually, is that the 24-hour news cycle is that we're just going from one thing to the other thing. I mean, yesterday you kept bringing the conversation back to October the 7th in 2023. This has been going on since 1947.
And I referenced that yesterday as well. I talked about the response post-October 7th, and much of this predates that. I do understand that. But
the news cycle keeps going back to that. There has been the NACBA in 1947-48 was an atrocity, a massive atrocity. 800,000 people displaced, mm-hmm. removed from their homes. That's what half the population of Northern Ireland.
Yep, I get you.
You know,
Tim, I do have to move on. I mean, just to be clear, I'm not saying what you're saying shouldn't happen, but what I'm saying is that I can't see it happening. I do believe it to be a little bit different to the South African situation. It doesn't mean that that I think what has happened since October the 7th, this collective punishment of Palestinians, is in any way justifiable. It's just I just don't see us getting to the place that you want us to be in. But I suppose you're saying the Irish government could take a lead in relation.
What would help? Okay, but what would help is to expand the narrative, expand the conversation beyond just this politics. I mean, we had the politics of the last atrocity in Ireland here too, as well. Every time one side let off a bomb, or the Brits shot somebody, or whatever, and would you condemn this and would you condemn that? Okay, this is a long term political strategy that we're looking at here. Mm-hmm. And the whole, you have to look at it in context all the way through. And part of that context is what the way that Europeans treated Jews mm-hmm. for millennia. Mm-hmm. Part of that context is that.
I do understand. That, you know, but I do believe, Tim, you're talking about this, the historic, and if Trump were to follow through with what he's suggesting, it's not something we haven't seen before. But what I believe is that Israel and the United States believe that this is end game, that they have the plan to draw a line under this and consign it to history. So I mean, we can't ignore what's happening right now as well. Of course, the context, the historical context, is very important. But it feels to me like the United States is in their mind at the end game of this, to draw a line under it once and for all.
Well, that, so you're saying that, okay, that is one point of view. I think that is morally reprehensible.
No, of course. I think most people do. Okay. I think most people do, of course. Okay. To stand beside the man who destroyed it and say it's destroyed and we need to relocate people elsewhere and effectively build
American weapons.
Well, exactly. I mean, the irony's not lost on me, don't get me wrong, but I presume that that's what they're thinking, that they draw a line under this and everyone moves on. I don't know. I'm not saying defending it. I'm just observing what seems to be happening.
Greg, I don't think the Palestinian people are going anywhere. Mm-hmm. They're not going to move.
But as I said to the Palestinian yesterday, who stands up for them? They don't have...
They saddle, yeah.
But they don't have the capability to resist. So who stands up for them?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It is up to the world to say, look, this is wrong.
Yeah,
you know, this is, you know, I mean, the International Court has said it is wrong. They've said you now have every country now has the obligation to do something about this, mm-hmm. to take political, economic action.
Okay.
And we have, you know, I mean, but the words, the rulings are great. Action has to happen.
Okay, and Tim, I'm not saying, not that it matters whether I agree or disagree, I'm not saying I am opposed to your views. The purpose of my questions was to try and get to really, you know, what actually can be done, what can be achieved, because, words aren't getting us anywhere. Like, opinions aren't progressing this situation. It's not going to be me or you. We can all make a difference, Tim. I was just trying to sort of draw it out into the wider, you know, geopolitical situation. You know, where are we going with this? It's quite concerning. I share many of your concerns, and I really do appreciate your time. Lots of you actually texting in on this. Trump and Gaza aside, we've enough to do cleaning up. We have enough to do clean up your own doorstep. Your guest said Ireland should take a moral stance against Gaza-Israel situation. What about using the moral stance in relation to the abortion and killing of our children? You know, there's no middle ground where Israel is concerned. Stop apologising for Israel. It's disgusting. It simply didn't happen. That wasn't the tone of the conversation. The line was where to, who's going to do it, how. Maybe we should let Trump tell the people of the Falls Road and Ballymurphy that they should go to Donegal and Cavan, and the people of Craigan and the Bogside as well. A lunatic of a man, says a listener. Greg, it is like South Africa. Stop trying to play the in-betweener. Israel's an apartheid state. Don't apologise for it, as our government is doing so. Didn't. How much money does Greg think is enough to justify genocide? I think you've misinterpreted my comments, but that could be my fault as well. Very impressed by the Palestinian representative's testimony yesterday about the latest developments in Gaza. What we now have is two lawless regimes led by individuals who by right should be serving long prison sentences for fraud and multiple other crimes, holding the rest of the planet to ransom. World leaders need to take a stand and resist their illegal power grab of Gaza and attempted expulsion of innocent Palestinians from their homeland and their own land. And indeed, there was quite a strong backlash from many leaders around the world. Trump inflamed the USA when his election was lost the first time. Now he'd done the same thing again by coming out and saying that the Palestinians should leave Gaza standing by a war criminal. He'd just gone and led a recruitment for Hamas. Smart man, says a listener. Trump and Netanyahu are after two Gaza marine fields that are estimated to contain 30 billion cubic meters of natural gas, more than is needed to power Palestine territories with potential export. They want the citizens of Gaza out. The caller saying they want the resources. We have to stop allowing Shannon Airport to be used to facilitate these war crimes and crimes against humanity. Again, another thing I'm sure Tim would agree with that could be done. Greg, as long as the arms companies and AIPAC are making enormous donations to the US politicians, nothing will change. They're calling the shots. It needs to stop, indeed. And that is the extent of the problem. And how do you break that down? All right, listen, thanks for all your comments. Keep them coming in whichever way they land. Back after the news and obituary notices.